Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman for the remainder of today's Issues today. He had a prior engagement. And we'll return to the captain's chair tomorrow to captain the USS Enterprise. I don't know. I was going to kind of go in Star Trek there somewhere, but I don't even think it's USS.
I thought you were going to copy Brian Fisher.
Oh, what is he?
USS Focal Point.
Oh, the USS Focal Point. No, I was going to kind of go to Star Trek thing.
NC-1701.
Yeah. Well, good. Steve Jordahl, also a Star Trek nerd.
Yes. In fact, you know, I'm just on Netflix. I'm just going back and rewatching the series.
You know what? The BBC will have. You're talking about the old Star Trek, the original with William Shatner.
No, there's that. I'm talking about the Next Generation one.
Oh, I never watched any of those because when all those new ones came on, I thought, no, I'm going to just watch the original. But then I've gone back to watch some of the originals, and I go, wow, this is pretty corny.
It is. It was, but they kind of played off of it too. But the new generation was the one that stuck for
Captain Picard.
Yes. Yeah. My wife and I were young parents. Well, had a child when this was coming out. Megan was probably 2 at the time, and this is how we realized we were watching too much TV because it was right around dinner time, and I think it was once a week because it was a first run series at the time. We'd sit down on the TV trays and watch, and so the theme came on. Bum bum bum. My daughter, from her high chair, goes, "Pace, the Sinal Sentier." And we got to stop. We got to stop.
But you didn't, did you? You didn't stop watching.
No, not at all.
All right. Well, no Final Frontiers here. We're just the same old frontiers. All right. Steve Jordahl is in. What's the news you want to talk about here?
We are starting to see some states really be aggressive with pro-life laws, with laws that are restricting abortion in the states. And Iowa is kind of at the front of this pack. It has passed what is known as a heartbeat bill, which basically says as soon as you can detect a heartbeat via an ultrasound, then you can no longer abort the child because it's a life.
Now, we talked about this a little bit during the last hour, but this is extraordinary because a heartbeat bill, when you detect, now Walker, you were talking about this a little bit in our story meeting, I think, this morning. By the time you can detect a heartbeat, you're usually at the point where a woman would even think to take a pregnancy test.
A lot of women will not know they're pregnant at this point, which basically leaves only like the morning after pill, as a way to do an abortion, unless they're just on top of things right now.
Right.
Back
to Iowa.
Yeah. So Iowa has just passed this bill. It has passed the legislature. It is at the governor's desk. Governor Kim Reynolds, and people think that she will probably sign this. We have a word from Maggie DeWitt, who is the executive director for Iowans for Life, who thinks that that this is a good thing. This is cut 4.
This is the first time that we have made a concerted effort towards the heartbeat legislation. Last year in Iowa, we were able to pass a 20-week ban, and that was the first real substantial pro-life legislation that we had been passed here in Iowa for some time. So we wanted to take it a step further. Obviously, the gold standard for us is life at fertilization. And we did push that initially in the session and did not get the momentum we needed. And so switched gears into the heartbeat bill and were able to push that through and now into law.
So now into law, that means Kim Reynolds, the governor, signed it? Did she sign it?
Well, my latest information is that it's at her desk, but she may have signed it in the interim.
Okay. All right.
So this has been and it's an interesting story because there's been a debate within the pro-life community of whether this tactic will work. Obviously, every pro-life advocate would like to see abortion not exist. They would like to see adoption as the you know, a woman right. carry the pregnancy to term, and then if she can't doesn't want the child, let's adopt it out. Mm-hmm. That kind of is a win for everybody. It's a courageous move for the mom who does sacrifice 9 months or gives 9 months of her life for nurturing this child and the heartbreak of having to give it up. But if that's best for the child lives in another family who's looking, and there are plenty of them looking for children. Mm-hmm. The reason it's been a debate is because many in the pro-life community don't think that a heartbeat bill will be able to withstand a court challenge, and if it loses, it would be a step backwards. So I don't. That's
yeah.
where the wisdom is right now, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I do agree that you have to be careful when you're passing laws that you don't set yourself up for long-term defeat in court, because these courts, you know, they can strike down laws, and it sets bad precedent. P-R-E-C-E-N-D.
Right.
Yeah, not president like the president, but precedent. It sets bad up precedent, which these courts use precedent mm-hmm. to then rule on future rulings.
Right.
So, yeah, you do have to think about that. But I think if you're challenging in front of a constitutional judge, one who interprets the Constitution with original intent, then these laws will be upheld long term, I think, and especially with the Supreme Court leaning conservative now.
I think it would be an interesting test to see if something like this did get to the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court stands right now.
Well, the original Roe versus Wade ruling in 1973, and then the Doe versus Bolton, I think,
yeah.
which was several years after that. But they, if I'm not mistaken, I wasn't prepared to bring this point up, so I'm just kind of going on what's in the back of my mind a little bit. But it seems like both of those decisions left an opening for how abortion could be restricted. And one or two or both of the rulings made it clear that if science changed mm-hmm. and we learned more about viability or about whether the unborn child could feel pain, those kinds of things, it could be revisited. So
yeah, that becomes
the part of the strategy of these laws. Is this something that if we can go before the Supreme Court, we can win on? I mean, there's all kinds of things that you have to consider, because you know, if you can, like some people say, no, we just need to wait and ban and reverse the ban and pass a constitutional amendment. Well, but if you can get a 20-week bill passed and it withstands federal judges, you are saving X number of lives of yes. Unborn children who would have ordinarily been. It's not like going to zero,
right?
But
yeah.
you are.
It's an incremental approach.
Yes. Yeah, and there is controversy. There is debate in the pro-life community about which route the pro-life community should go.
Yeah,
and that's just going to be from now till Jesus.
And
comes
I tell
back.
Folks that we have. I tell folks that we all agree that abortion needs to be ended altogether. But if legislation can save thousands here and thousands there, and you're right. working your way towards ending abortion altogether, I think that's a righteous call.
I think it is. I think what the pro-life community, the church, probably needs to do is start focusing on alternatives for women. They are there, and they are focusing on them now. Mm-hmm, right. And things like I think Focus on the Family has this thing where they're getting 4D ultrasounds out into different
machines. You mean?
Yeah, the ultrasound machines. Because when a woman sees the child within her, she's much more likely to
right.
to keep that child. But to be able to have a lot more resources to help with adoption, so that it doesn't take a long time for that to happen, to kind of mm-hmm. grease those wheels, so that because there really is, we focus our anger, rightly so, at the abortionists who would take the life of a child, and the woman is a victim in this, and so we do have to have a heart and a compassion for the woman, and somewhere for not just to say, well, no abortion, therefore you're stuck with the child. We really do, I think, should focus and publicize more the options that women have, so that if on the day comes that abortion is outlawed, it's not a no win for these poor women.
Yeah. Right. Well, the women, and this, I'm a male, so I don't, you know, I can't speak. I haven't been through all this, but I'm just saying from my perspective, I just stated the obvious. I'm a male.
nowadays, Walker, that's just something you have to basically make.
Yeah, well,
a strong
I'm declaring it.
Can you give us your pronouns, please?
Loud and proud. He.
He.
No, but I was gonna say that the women are in a tough position if it is an unplanned pregnancy, but they're not. I guess I wouldn't say that they're always the victim per se. You know, a lot of it's life choices. So, and it's, I'm not saying I don't have compassion for them. I'm just saying that, you know, what's the saying that you live? Basically, you reap what you sow.
It's true. When I say victim, I think that it, by and large, most women are a victim of the abortion industry and the ease with which they have made it and the profit that they are making off of it.
They're vulnerable and they are being
convinced
right. that this
I
is
would
the
agree.
Best thing.
And that's I think where I'm coming from. Yeah. I choose right now not to really engage with the reasons that they're getting pregnant. I engage in that in other areas of
right.
not the pro-life debate. We can talk about the purpose of sexuality and saving mm-hmm. sex for marriage. But, you know, a lot of women who are looking for abortions are married. Mm-hmm. They're married women, poor couples that just can't afford, they think, to have a child. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, totally
right.
agree.
What else we got?
I wanted to talk about a spanking. If this is something that we can get in. Fort Lauderdale, Florida, I'm sorry, Jacksonville, Florida, has passed a zone, what they're calling hit-free zones, and this is for their public buildings, so it would be like Wilson's Children's Hospital, state offices, the medical examiner's office, Quigley House, Family Support Services, all of these buildings are saying. Now, this is what they say, said Michael Aubin, who's Wilson Children's Hospital's president. We say, we know hit-free zones could be controversial. We know some people think they should still be able to spank their children, but not here, not within our four walls.
Well, first, I just need to be upfront and honest with our listening audience. I'm now a grandparent, so my spanking days are over. So I have fully embraced grandparenthood. Mm-hmm. I'm Papa.
Don't
Papa
you love
doesn't
it?
Spank.
No.
Papa just gives to grandchildren everything they want. My kids, on the other hand, my
you're
son and daughter-in-law.
You're setting your son and daughter-in-law up for spanking because that's, you're spoiling the child.
That is a grandparent's prerogative.
There you go.
So this is just in certain buildings?
This is in state-owned buildings, state-owned property.
Listen, I understand, you know, that there's a certain amount of freedom that that the state has in terms of its own property. If I trusted statists, mm-hmm. in other words, people who want the state to grow bigger and bigger and bigger, if I trusted them, I might say, okay, that's fine. But I don't trust them because everything with them is incremental. We're going to take a little step here, then we're going to take another step, then we're another step. And before you know it, what these folks are going to be pushing is you can't even spank kids in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing with the gun control debate. If I trusted these people that this is really what they were after, mm-hmm. I might say, okay, well, let's make some changes. But I don't trust them. I know what they really want. And what's the old Arab proverb? You don't want to ever let the camel get its nose under the tent because everything else is soon going to mm-hmm. follow. So that's my opinion on that.
Yeah.
I worked for Focus on the Family for a long time, and of course, Dr. Dobson was one of the big proponents of a well-timed spanking, if necessary, under whatever circumstances. Mm-hmm. But my realization was that there is no child under like 12 that likes Dr. Dobson, and no parent that doesn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Because. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I completely agree with Ed, though. The state getting – anytime the state gets involved in parent issues, which discipline your children is definitely a parent issue, mm-hmm. you know, that's a no-go. And I'm not saying all parents are perfect, and some may spank when the spanking is not needed, But that's not the state's. That's for husband and wife to debate on when a spanking's necessary. Or not.
I think I had to spank my daughter maybe three times in growing up in her life.
And we did, yeah.
And my son, you look at him cross-eyed, and he'd break down into tears. It was never necessary.
Well, we always looked at spanking as like nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted my kids to always know it was there, and if we brought out the nuke, then we were going nuclear. So we didn't even have the big, you know, the big paddles. We had the little, you know, the paddle ball paddles.
Yeah.
We even removed the staple. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So we had those things everywhere. My wife carried one. I have so, and everyone, so if they acted up and, you know, we were telling them not to and they were ignoring me, I'd take the paddle out and set it down where I was, wherever I was sitting. And they knew that the nuke was now visible. Okay.
You had your finger on the button.
I had my finger on the button. They were responsible for what happened, you know. But we very rarely had to spank.
So
my son was the same as yours.
Yeah.
He was very easily brokenhearted. Mm. My daughter was a little more strong-willed. Yeah. But we didn't have to spank her much. And past a certain age, we stopped spanking her.
No, yeah.
Because it becomes humiliating.
Yeah, that's not the perk.
Right.
But now, my dad was a champion spanker.
Really?
I admire my dad more than any man human on earth, mm-hmm. and there's a debate about whether I turned out okay or not.
But even within this room, right here.
That's right. But he knew how to do it. So when it was time for me to get a spanking, he'd send me to my room, and it would be like 5 minutes while if there was anger involved, he cooled down,
right.
He came in, he'd sit on the bed. He'd say, Steve, I want to let you know that I love you more than life itself, and this is why I'm doing this. We'd go over what I did, why I shouldn't have done it, and what the purpose was, and then he would deliver, and I felt it. Mm-hmm. He would deliver some healthy swings, mm-hmm. and then afterwards, he would hold me and love me.
Yeah.
And walk out of the room.
The purpose of punishment, I'm going to give you my opinion on the purpose of discipline / punishment. I think people who say that spanking kids is physical abuse are morons. Okay, mm-hmm. The whole purpose of punishment or discipline is to teach the child to control themselves.
Okay,
so they know that there is a consequence. Whatever those consequences, whatever works,
right.
Whatever that consequence is, they need to know if I do this, this is going to happen. So I'm going to decide not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it takes to get the kid, because you teach the child to do that so when they get older, they can do that as well. Because at some point, you're going to run up against your teachers, the law, your boss, whatever it's going to be. And you better have learned to control yourself. That's the whole purpose.
It's better to learn these things in the controlled environment of a family where there's no lasting grudge or permanent life damage. Mm-hmm. And then rather to go
I would love to see, and we can move on after this. I would love to see, I was thinking when my wife and I were talking about this because she's a teacher, but I would love to see maybe George Barner, if he's listening, somebody do research, and it may already be out there, but research on corporal punishment versus non-corporal, you know, non-physical punishment, mm-hmm. you know, write-ups, detention, et cetera, and just the difference in behavior and you know, to see which... Yeah. If statistically corporal punishment, and I would bet it would prove to be more
influential. There are those, but it would depend on who did the study because
– Yeah.
Yeah.
And how you define – because these studies I don't like, they lump in true physical abuse.
Yeah, and this is what we're seeing in Jacksonville where it's a no-hit law. Well, okay, so I don't ever believe you should hit a child. In other words, angry, lashing out, abuse.
In the
wrong.
Face, in the head,
well,
all that kind of
stuff. Anywhere, if it's in anger and if it's lashing out and if it's meant to hurt the child, no.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what corporal punishment
is. All right.
So
ends our class on parenting. You can get the CDs, you know, of our big...
You got a problem? Please write to Ed Victagliano. John McCain is planning his funeral. Now he is home and reportedly doing better from the stomach infection that he had, but he has been battling brain cancer for more than a year. And in his wishes for his funeral, he says he doesn't want President Trump to attend, but he would like President Barack Obama to deliver a eulogy.
Really?
Yeah. Just
I think there's some
for what
still,
it's worth.
I think it's easy to say there's still some hard feelings there.
You think?
The primary. And also.
And Trump? Did Trump? Was it his? Was it John McCain's wife that he kind of insulted? Was that?
That was Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
Okay.
But President Trump did insult John McCain's military career.
Yes, he did.
That's true. Said he wasn't a hero.
Yeah. Now I will say John McCain. I think he invited Pence instead.
He did invite Mike Pence. Yes.
So, but
and,
you know,
and I don't know that. I'm sorry. I don't know that John McCain would do this out of spite to say, I'm still angry at you for a tweet. I think it's more of a disagreement with, I mean, I think John McCain is an ever-Trumper and being at my funeral.
Mm-hmm. So, it was interesting to see that, that President Trump did not go to Barbara Bush's, the first lady, the former first lady, wedding. And I know that he put out a press release, put out a press release citing, you know, increased security that his presence would bring, etc. And that may have been the case, but I just, in the back of my mind, I wonder, I speculate if there's, because of the conflict in the campaign between Jeb Bush, and if he just didn't want to go and
well,
cause
or
a
maybe
scene.
Maybe the Bushes, maybe the president called and the Bushes said, we'd rather you didn't come.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know that Trump would have been able to keep that a secret. I don't know.
Well,
but that is an odd thing.
I read at the time that there is it's not a tradition for presidents to attend the funerals of first ladies. Is that right? Yeah.
Okay.
Some do, some don't. They will attend former presidents' funerals. Okay.
And I know Melania did go.
So,
all right.
Maybe they're there.
Let's end with a new file, I guess we could call it. This is kind of a Dumb and Dumber file from England.
And that's a great
song. Some British schools, that's Chicago, some British schools are removing old school clocks, you know, the ones with hands and faces, because the new generation doesn't know how to tell time.
I do not doubt that.
And they're saying they're used to seeing digital representations of the time, and they're saying that it's maybe too stressful during exam time to know how much time you got left because they don't know how to read a clock.
I'm a little ambivalent about this, and here's why. Because that's old technology. It is passing away, but it is still around enough. I think kids ought to at least be taught it. But it's like anything else. If you don't use it, you're going to forget it.
Like driving with a clutch.
Yes. I mean, that's like saying, well, you might buy a car someday that has a clutch and you have to use a
or be stuck somewhere, right.
I don't know. I'm not sure. You're the younger generation. What do you think?
Well, it's kind of like writing.
Were you taught to read a clock with the hands?
Yes, we were. Okay. Well, we were taught the variations of different clocks. I mean, there's only two or three versions. You know, you have digital, analog, and whatever.
The sundial.
Well, the sundial. But anyways, we were taught all that. And sometimes, but it, I will say, compared to the you know, digital and the old school clock, you do have to look for like a couple seconds and kind of study where it is because they all look the same. You know, but you can glance and say it's about 6:45.
I'm telling you, radio, if you're in radio professionally, seeing that sweep of the second hand is the only way. I can't clock look and say 10:98. I see you don't even think numbers. You just see that much time. You know how much time, you know how to hit a post. Yeah. So,
But seriously, writing now is they're not teaching it as much. Yeah.
Cursive,
you're talking
about cursive. Yeah.
Cursive and just penmanship because of the computers.
Yeah.
But that's something we definitely need to teach.
All right, folks, we're done. What's that, the Dumber Dumber file you called it?
That would be the Dumb and Dumber file.
All right, folks, well, we are done with today's issues for this day, for Monday. More great programming is directly ahead. You're listening to American Family Radio on the American Family Radio Network. God willing, we will be with you tomorrow. Have a great day.